From the state capitol, WFSU Public Media brings you Capitol Report.
The Florida legislature is moving to make it a lot tougher for citizens to put proposed changes to the state constitution on the ballot, even though opponents say such proposals are often very popular.
Amendment 4 had the highest validity rate of any petition in recent history. That's a fact.
Also this week, lawmakers struggle to craft a plan that saves the state's condominium owners in the midst of a multifaceted crisis.
Not only does it help Floridians harden their homes, it also saves on their homeowners insurance premiums over time.
We'll also learn why the Florida National Guard is helping guard state prisons and discover a new approach to shutting down online scam artists. I'm Tom Flanagan. Online and on air, this is Capitol Report and the end-of-week wrap-up of top stories from Tallahassee.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com.
A bill that would make it harder for members of the public to put proposed constitutional amendments on the ballot passed its first committee yesterday. Supporters say the measure helps fix a broken system. But as Tristan Wood reports, opponents worry it will have a chilling effect, keeping Floridians from engaging with the process.
Ballot initiatives on recreational marijuana and protecting abortion rights faced heavy opposition from prominent Republicans during the 2024 election cycle. Governor Ron DeSantis has called for changes to the petition process. Now, Fort Myers Republican Representative Jenna Persons Maleka has a bill that would make getting future amendments on the ballot harder. Under the bill, groups would need a $1 million bond before collecting petitions.
Now the process has been taken over by out-of-state fraudsters looking to make a quick buck, and by special interests intent on buying their way into our Constitution.
Persons Maleka says her bill would also make it illegal for people who don't live in the state to get paid to collect ballots, and it would shorten the deadline to turn in signed ballots from 30 days to 10 days.
The bill seeks to root out the problem and provide assurances that only those with a stake in our Constitution can change it.
In the run-up to the last election, Republicans claimed those looking to get abortion and pot on the ballot turned in fraudulent signatures. But Lauren Brunzel, who ran the campaign for the abortion initiative, says that's not true.
Amendment 4 had the highest validity rate of any petition in recent history. That's a fact. Like, that just is. You can look at the data and find that. Part of that was our massive volunteer program, which collected over 250,000 petitions. This bill chills volunteers from being able to participate in citizens-led democracy.
Members of the public spoke about the bill for almost 2 hours at its first committee stop. One of the opponents was Genesis Robinson of the Equal Ground Action Fund.
Let's be clear. This bill is not about election integrity. It's about fear. Fear of the people using their constitutional right to act when you fail to deliver on the issues that matter most to them.
Chad Cundy with the Florida Chamber of Commerce says his business advocacy group supports the bill because it wants to keep out-of-state special interests out of the process.
It was originally envisioned in 1968, rewriting the Constitution as a citizen-led process. Unfortunately, has devolved into the highest bidder placing near-permanent changes before Florida voters. The Florida Chamber's long maintained issues that are able to be addressed legislatively should be, which allows for necessary adjustments as policy preferences change, knowledge improves.
Florida's ballot initiative process has a higher threshold than many states that allow residents to amend their constitutions. It requires almost 1 million signatures for a proposal to get on the ballot and support from 60% of voters to pass it. both abortion and pot failed in 2024, with 56 and 57% support respectively. I'm Tristan Wood.
Some Florida condo owners say they're at risk of losing their homes. They're struggling to pay rising fees and blame a recently passed law that was intended to make condos safer. Now lawmakers are filing bills to try to make condominium properties more affordable. Adrian Andrews reports the plan is backed by Governor Ron DeSantis.
St. Augustine Republican Senator Tom Leake has a bill to increase home improvement grants offered by the MySafe Florida Condominium Pilot Program. The program, launched last year to help strengthen condo properties against hurricanes, if passed, condo owners who use the program to improve their roofs, doors, and windows could see a decrease in their property insurance rates.
The program is intended to harden structures and reduce the risk of hurricane damage. Thus, grants should only be provided for work that will accomplish this purpose.
Leake's proposal is backed by Governor Ron DeSantis, who spent the months leading up to session meeting with Florida condo owners to hear concerns and help come up with possible solutions for skyrocketing insurance and homeowner association fees. DeSantis urged the legislature to roll out condo reforms on the opening day of session.
It's putting people in a very difficult financial pickle.
After the 2021 Surfside condo collapse in Miami, lawmakers passed legislation requiring condo associations to make routine inspections and keep reserve funds for repairs. But the governor says those laws created problems for some condo owners.
I think we all agree if you need an assessment to be able to prevent a building from collapsing, nobody wants to relive Surfside. But I don't think you can look at how this law has actually operated and say that those assessments are all as a result of saving the building from collapsing. And so
8 condo bills have been filed this session. Leake said at a recent bill hearing that his proposal would make it easier for condo associations to get the money they need for repairs. But it comes with a few caveats. Under the proposal, grants could only go towards condos that are currently occupied and are at least 3 stories high, and 75% of the owners must agree with the repairs.
The program grant would pay for roof covering so long as the covering is recommended by the initial inspection report, and also that a condo may not apply for the inspection and grant unless the condominium association has complied with the inspection requirements in the appropriate statutes.
The MySafe Florida pilot program applies only to condos within 15 miles of Florida's coast. Last year, the state allocated $30 million to 165 associations. This year, if the bill passes, grants will remain capped at $175,000 per association. Hillsborough Republican Senator Jim Boyd says that money can go towards strengthening homes, which in return should lower owners' insurance.
Not only does it help Floridians harden their homes, it also saves on their homeowners' insurance premiums over time.
Another lawmaker, Miami Republican Representative Vicky Lopez, is stepping up to address the condo issue. Her proposal punishes condo associations that don't follow the safety laws currently in place. According to the bill's text, associations must keep their buildings up to code and have funding set aside for repairs and maintenance. Associations that don't follow the rules risk losing out on state-backed insurance and will be left to pay for repairs out of pocket. I'm Adrian Andrews.
While Florida-based insurance companies were losing hundreds of millions of dollars between 2017 and 2019, their affiliate companies were making billions. That's around the time Hurricanes Irma and Michael hit. It also marks the beginning of the industry's latest financial crisis. A report commissioned by the state in 2022 shed light on this, and journalist Lawrence Maurer recently uncovered it. He's the Tallahassee correspondent for the Tampa Bay Times and the Miami Herald. Maurer told WUSF's Jessica Mazaros where all this revenue came from.
The homeowner premiums you pay, that's where all the revenue is coming from. So why would the insurance companies be losing hundreds of millions of dollars while the affiliates are making billions of dollars? It seems backwards to a lot of people.
So while Florida-based insurers were saying that they're running out of money, they were actually sending themselves a bunch of money via their sister companies that they own.
Exactly. And the reason why these companies are structured this way in Florida is because basically it's hard to make money here without it, okay? The Office of Insurance Regulation basically caps the profits of insurance companies at around 4.5%. And if you're trying to allure investors to Florida, one of the riskiest insurance markets probably in the world, that 4.5% isn't real enticing. And so what companies have done is they have a parent company, and then below the parent company is the insurance company. And then there's a spider web of other companies that spawn off of this. So you'll have companies, for example, that will handle all underwriting services. They will handle your claim. If you call and have a claim, it'll be a sister company. It won't be the insurance company, it'll be a sister company.
But the state never saw the report, right? And instead of trying to regulate this kind of side hustle in the industry, they actually tried to solve this problem of insurers not having enough money by actually making it harder for insurance companies to be sued, right? As a solution to like their hard times, right?
Yes, that was the primary solution to the homeowners insurance crisis, was to make it harder to sue insurance companies. However, regulators did realize that this was an issue with these affiliate companies. First of all, it's not really a secret. The state does these insolvency reports on companies. Well, guess what? In most of these cases, the auditors find that these improper payments to affiliates were basically inflated. And that's the reason why, or at least a major contributing factor of why these companies go under. So regulators knew about this, and they commissioned this report. They got the findings in March of 2022 and did not share that with anyone. The question is, why not release this report?
What's being done now to try and regulate these shady practices, do you think?
Well, the Office of Insurance Regulation does want more powers. They want also to change the way these fees are structured. So right now, the affiliate companies will charge the insurance company, you know, up to 34% of premium dollar, basically, which is a lot of money. And what OIR wants is to make it a flat fee.
So what are you going to be keeping an eye on this upcoming legislative session?
You know, OIR has their bill out there. There's also legislation that would require the state to better report the compensation of insurance company executives. That's out there. There's a variety of legislation that's coming down the pike that would basically change how claims are handled after storms and stuff.
That was reporter Lawrence Maurer speaking with WUSF's Jessica Mazaros. Since Florida's legislative session kicked off this week, the state House Speaker has ordered hearings into the report's findings. A bill's moving in the Florida Senate that would add a new way to serve bad actors who scam vulnerable adults via the online means by which they contacted their victims. Margie Menzel reports.
In 2023, people over the age of 60 lost more than $3.4 billion to financial exploitation. That's according to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Elder law attorney Shannon Miller says sometimes the losses can be significant. She points to the story of a widow who was recently the victim of a scam.
She went on Millionaire Match, and she met a gentleman who told her his name was Tom, and he had a very good gold and diamond business. And if she would simply help him pay the bond to release his gold and diamonds, then he would be able to come to Florida, sweep her off her feet, and they would live happily ever after.
Miller says the woman had given the scammer, Tom, $2 million before her sons learned of the situation and tried to intervene. By then, she had sent Tom cashier's checks totaling $500,000 more.
Her sons knew about it. We filed an emergency temporary guardianship with the court because we didn't have the option of an exploitation injunction because we didn't know who Tom was. So we file the emergency guardianship proceedings. We get the court orders. The bank is holding the assets as long as they can because they know it's fraud, but they're limited as far as how long they can hold these assets.
By the time the court order got to the bank, telling them to keep freezing the assets, the money had already left the bank. The widow had lost a total of $2.5 million. Fort Myers Republican Senator Jonathan Martin is sponsoring a bill he hopes would help in such cases.
Unfortunately, the stories of seniors losing their life savings to exploiters, even after friends and family become aware of the theft, but the money is gone, and there's been no chance of recovery, that continues to happen in the state. This allows an injunction to be filed that would prevent any additional assets from being stolen by freezing assets, even allowing a freeze of the exploiter's assets.
In 2018, lawmakers approved a measure that allowed an exploited person or a family member to go to the clerk of courts and file an injunction to freeze their assets. No attorney or filing fee is required. The legislature strengthened the protections in 2021, criminalizing undue influence. Martin says the current laws have been successful against known exploiters.
But scammers escape the law by virtue of their anonymity. This allows an injunction to be filed and the exploiter to be served within 15 days.
Martin's bill would create the ability to serve someone such as Tom, who can't be identified and sent a legal notice in the mail. It's usually someone in a social media application or electronic mail program. And the only way to serve them is via the app that protects their identity. Sanford Republican Senator Jason Broder noted that Florida lawmakers see their fair share of elder abuse in the course of their work.
And it's disgusting. I mean, it's preying on the most vulnerable. And in 2025, it is silly to think that the only way you can serve someone is through a certified mail.
According to the bill analysis, financial exploitation of the elderly is a growing problem, up 11% from 2022. I'm Margie Menzel.
Members of the Florida National Guard have been assisting state prisons with chronic staff shortages for more than 2 years. It was supposed to be a temporary measure, but as WLRN's Danny Rivero reports, the soldiers could be there for the long haul.
Governor Ron DeSantis first dispatched the Florida National Guard into the prison system in September of 2022 on what he called a temporary short-term basis. Since then, the governor's extended his executive order 4 times, calling the short-term part of the equation into question.
When I was a kid, the line, "My God, we're going to have to call the National Guard in," that meant something was wrong. It was like an exaggeration your grandmother used to talk about how important something was or how exaggerated something was.
Jason Pizzo is a Democratic state senator from Miami and the Senate minority leader. He's a former prosecutor.
It's not a temporary fix. It's not a stopgap measure. It's becoming something that's rather permanent. That's a disaster if we get to that point.
300 National Guard troops were dispatched in 2022. And by this February, there were still 263 troops in state prisons, all stationed in the Florida Panhandle. It's cost the state $64 million so far. The reason for all this? Chronic staffing issues at state prisons. According to state law, if staff levels at prisons fall below a certain level, inmates have to be released on an emergency basis. There were about 6,000 job vacancies when the National Guard was first brought in.
We've recovered significantly over the last several years.
Florida Secretary of Corrections Ricky Dixon recently told state lawmakers that progress is being made on hiring and retaining more workers for the prisons. Even though the state has filled thousands of those vacancies, the need is still growing.
We have 8,000 more inmates today than we did in January 2021, and we have the same amount of staff supervising them.
The prisons have had to open up 53 new housing units to accommodate the new prisoners, and they expect the numbers to just keep going up as the state population grows.
We've been very fortunate to have the National Guard in our system. That will end by this June. They're phasing out, and we need that to happen at some point, obviously, where we can be self-sustaining.
I don't see a way that they're going to be able to pull the National Guard on their given time frame without potentially having to hire private security to supplement.
Jeff Brandes is a former Republican state senator and executive director of the Florida Policy Institute, a nonpartisan research group. He's called for prison reform for years, and he says a core issue with state prisons is geographical. There's just not a lot of workforce where the prisons are concentrated, in the Panhandle.
Most of these small towns can no longer support prisons of this size at this scale.
A state commissioned report found the prison system needs over $6 billion in infrastructure investments to keep operating, and it needs to dramatically increase pay to be able to hire and retain staff. He says the state is decades behind in addressing all these hard realities.
The National Guard is deployed during emergency situations and during policy failures. And, you know, this is a policy failure. This is a leadership failure. And the solution has been to put the National Guard in. That is not a long-term permanent solution. That is a Band-Aid on a gaping wound, which is the Florida prison system.
I reached out to Governor DeSantis's office about this and didn't hear back. The newly passed immigration law in Florida adds a wrinkle to the saga. It orders the state prison system to evaluate how many beds might be available to help the Trump administration detain immigrants to help with mass deportations. The most recent report found over 8,000 beds are available. Democratic Minority Leader Pizzo says if that happens,
might need more National Guard.
The current executive order dispatching the Guard into state prisons expires on June 5th, unless it's extended for a fifth time. I'm Danny Rivero in Miami.
Governor Ron DeSantis has rejected a sweeping new management plan for the Florida Keys National Marine Sanctuary, claiming it weakens Florida's rights in state waters. WLRN's Jenny Stiletovich reports the plan underwent repeated revisions and dozens of meetings that generated thousands of comments from the public.
The governor's veto frustrated scientists, anglers, and environmental advocates who worked on the plan over the last 13 years and said an update to rules was long overdue.
It was a really balanced plan that we developed at the end of the day. And certainly the state agencies were heavily involved in the process.
Kelly Cox is a member of the Sanctuary Advisory Council who helped write the plan, which provides the first major update to sanctuary rules since the sanctuary was created in 1990. DeSantis's letter to Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick, plus memos from Florida's Fish and Wildlife Commission, Department of Environmental Protection, and Resilience Office, make clear the state is seeking more control from an administration working to downsize the federal government. Cox worries any delays or weakening of the plan will worsen conditions in the Keys.
I'm a resident of the Florida Keys. I live in the village of Isla Mirada, and I can tell you on behalf of our community that our community has been waiting for action, and we are asking the state to do something.
In the years since planning started, the Keys have been hammered by disease, pollution, and a blistering marine heat wave. This winter, endangered sawfish have again started dying after more than 50 were killed last year. I'm Jenny Stiletovich in Miami.
You're listening to Capitol Report from WFSU Public Media. I'm Tom Flanagan. Finally this week, corporations are pumping billions into Florida's space industry, leading to unprecedented growth. Last year, Cape Canaveral hosted a record-setting 90 launches with more than 1,300 payloads. WGCU-TV Southwest Florida In Focus host Sandra Victorova was joined by Brendan Burns, space reporter for Central Florida Public Media, to look at how the space program is changing and growing and what that means to Floridians.
Tell us really what happened to the space industry when the space shuttle was retired and how we got to where we are now with this growth.
It was definitely devastating to the Central Florida economy. It had been long planned to retire the space shuttle. The space shuttle was built to bring big, heavy things into orbit, mainly to build the International Space Station. But it was also dangerous and expensive. There were two missions that ended in the loss of crew, 14 in total. It was not as reusable as hoped, and didn't fly as often as NASA wanted. So that decision was made, eventually ended in 2011. But NASA still needed to get stuff into space. That's when they began the process of looking for commercial companies to ship supplies up to the International Space Station. And among some of those companies that were picked was this scrappy upstart that we are all very familiar with now, SpaceX. But it was very close to being bankrupt at the time. With almost no cash left in the tank, NASA gave them a contract award to ship supplies to the International Space Station, essentially save the company. Since then, other companies were awarded those contracts, which spurred development. And then shortly afterwards, NASA was looking for ways to get astronauts to the International Space Station and awarded SpaceX and Boeing those contracts. This opens NASA up to working with commercial partners in a way that it hadn't done before, right? It's looking for services to get stuff into space and really began the post-shuttle boom here along Florida's Space Coast.
Brendan, help us understand the role these private companies play in NASA's big priority missions, the return to the moon, exploring Mars, and of course, maintaining research on the International Space Station.
Yeah, so these private companies are really doing the heavy lifting. NASA likes to think of horizon goals, so places to go like the moon and Mars. It's kind of doing the long game, and it's relying on the private partners to help get us there in the short term. The Artemis mission, that's our new moonshot that you mentioned, returning humans to the moon for the first time in more than a half century. That rocket is primarily built by Boeing. The lander that is going to take those astronauts to the lunar surface, Starship, that's built by SpaceX. Future landers are going to be launched that are built by Jeff Bezos-backed companies like Blue Origin. So those private companies are getting there. The International Space Station is going to retire in 2030. The commercial companies, companies like Axiom Space, based out of Houston, they're going to be building new space stations that NASA astronauts can use for science and research as well. So as NASA looks beyond low Earth orbit, looks to the moon, looks to Mars, these private companies are going to be helping with the day-to-day operations of living and working in space.
I assume you've seen tremendous job growth.
There is, yeah, and it expands beyond just launch providers here on the Space Coast. There is so much construction going on at these old launch pads in Cape Canaveral and Kennedy Space Center that have been dormant since the 1950s and 1960s. Space Florida, which is the state agency that is in charge of courting these private companies, they see this as an entire statewide initiative where you can see all of these space companies are in Jacksonville, they're in South Florida, they're on the West Coast, they extend all the way across the state. So really, we like to call ourselves the doorstep to space. That's Florida, the threshold to orbit.
Brendan Burns, space reporter for Central Florida Public Media with WGCU-TV's Southwest Florida in Focus. That's hosted by Sandra Victorova. Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Adrian Andrews, Regan McCarthy, Margie Menzel, and Tristan Wood. Thanks also to Jessica Mazaros, Danny Rivero, Jenny Stiletovich, Sandra Victorova, and Brendan Byrne. Technical support for Capitol Report comes from Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Join us again all of next week online and also on air for more reports from the state capitol.
Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. HR Florida State Council, affiliate of the Society of Human Resource Management, advocating for the workplace on behalf of 16,000 human resource professionals and 6,300 Florida employers. HR Florida State Council. More at hrflorida.org. The Florida AFL-CIO, representing over 1 million union members, retirees, and their families, committed to building a better future for all Floridians by promoting healthy communities, economic justice, and dignity in the workplace. Online at flaflcio.org. And from Rambana and Ritchie, immigration attorneys concentrating on complex immigration across the nation from Florida's capital and their mobile office. Self-sponsored green cards, I-9 compliance, and deportation defense. Rambana and Ritchie, on the web at rambana.com. Capitol Report is a production of WFSU Public Media in Tallahassee.